Hello. I think a lot of people have done a pretty good job of talking about that the tenuousness of the relationship between taking Tylenol while you're pregnant and having a baby who is later diagnosed with ADHD or autism. That relationship is definitely tenuous. I think it's definitely not proven. It was worth looking at. People have looked into it. And as we have examined it, we've mostly seen that the effect goes away when we do the best possible science that we can. And it is somewhat difficult for me not to just do like sort of a line by line look at how Donald Trump is talking about this in the press conference. Because like he's just such a terrible messenger for a public health message. He reads what's on the paper and then he exaggerates what's on the paper. He like, even though what is on the paper is already exaggerated from what we actually know and what we can actually say confidently, already it's exaggerated. And then he...
See, Bobby wants to be very careful with what he says, and he should, but I'm not so careful with what I say.
Finds himself incapable of further exaggerating. But I was looking into this, and I found this press release from the Department of Health and Human Services from April of 2025, so not that long ago, before this announcement, and I was sort of looking through it, and I found it to contain like a bizarre piece of information. So one of the things said throughout this press conference, and maybe I will actually just look it up to try and get just the part that I want to see.
The meteoric rise in autism is among the most alarming public health developments in history. There's never been anything like this.
That's the kind of thing that he does. He reads the page and then he has to like add his own thing. That's just, you just made that up. You know, he'll talk and he'll be like, and in some communities they don't have Tylenol, there's no autism. In Cuba, where they can't afford Tylenol, no, they have Tylenol in Cuba. Whatever. He's a bad messenger for public health information because he can't stick to just saying what we know. We're not going to mention the known reason for the bulk of this increase. It's not the whole reason for the increase, but for the bulk of the increase, we're going to ignore it.
Because when you go from 20,000 to 10,000, and then you go to 12, you know there's something artificial. They're taking something.
There it is. Okay, that's the thing I was actually looking for. You go from 1 in 20,000 to 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 10. You know it's artificial. You know they've got to be taking something. So we know what the bulk of this is. It's two effects. One is diagnostic switching. So what we used to call intellectual disability is now much more commonly called autism. Here's a graph of the decrease in intellectual disability diagnosis and the increase in autism diagnoses. Now, this doesn't explain all of it, but it explains part of it. It especially explains the increase in what's called level 3 or profound autism. So people who are nonverbal or largely nonverbal, they might speak, but they might mostly do echolalia, where they just say what you have said to them back to you. They might constantly stim, they might self-harm, and they have a very low IQ and require basically 24-hour care. So that, for much of our history, would just have been diagnosed as mental retardation or intellectual disability. And that diagnosis of intellectual disability still exists, but is often now just diagnosed as like level 3 or profound autism. So that's a big part of the increase in profound autism diagnoses. And then, but that's like not the bulk of the reason why we've gone from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 31. The bulk of that is that the diagnostic criteria generally have broadened. And everybody knows this. Everybody talks about this. You can see a graph right here. So like down here, we have profound autism diagnosis from 2000 to 2016. And up here, we have non-profound autism diagnosis from 2000 to 2016. And you see that this goes, profound autism diagnosis goes from 2.7 to 4.6 per 1,000 children. And non-profound autism goes from 3.9 to 14.3 children in 1,000. But you could see that diagnosis of profound autism between 2000 and 2016, it increased, but it didn't, it less than doubled, somewhere in the range of less than 100% increase. Meanwhile, for non-profound autism, we go from 3.9 to 14.3, which is substantially more than a doubling. That's more than a tripling. So anything that anybody says about the increase in autism diagnosis has to explain this graph, right? And one hypothesis that bears out if you look more deeply at the data is that diagnostic criteria expanded. Like, we know this. Like, it actually happened. Like, the DSM-5 was published, and it greatly expanded the diagnostic criteria for autism. The DSM-4 also increased the diagnostic criteria for autism. That was back in the 90s. And also, we were understanding autism more. We were providing more support for kids with autism. In fact, in public schools, the schools are required to give you, by law, required to give students that support. So a bunch of things changed, and that increased the number of people who are being diagnosed with autism. Now, diagnostic expansion and diagnostic switching are not the whole story. They are part of the story. But it's wild to say that we went from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 30, and so they must be taking something, when we know that the majority, the bulk of the increase, is because of diagnostic expansion. And the reason I'm making this video is this press release that came out in April 15th, 2025, that, you know, flew under the radar. It's very weird. It's not the kind of thing that HHS would ever release in any previous administration. It is full of very loaded language, running rampant, epidemic of autism. New data shows 1 in 31 children afflicted. This sounds as if it is being released by an anti-autism advocacy organization, not by the Department of Health and Human Services, but an interesting thing in here. It says, the increase in autism spectrum disorder prevalence cannot be solely attributed to the expansion of diagnosis to include higher functioning children. This is true. It is not solely that. And if I will, at the end of this video, talk a little bit about some of the other reasons why autism diagnosis has increased. I already told you one of them, which is not the expansion of diagnosis to include higher functioning children. It is also diagnostic switching from intellectual disability. But there are other actual risk factors that have increased, and we'll talk about those at the end, but I can't get into them right now. On the contrary, the percentage of ASD cases with higher IQs above 85 has decreased steadily over the last six ADDM reports to 36.1% in the 2022 survey. Nearly two-thirds of children with ASD in the latest survey had either severe or borderline intellectual disability. Now, this paragraph does not track with this graph. So these people with profound autism, they definitely have significant intellectual disability. These people who do not have profound autism, this group is going to have much less intellectual disability in it. This was very confusing to me. There's a lot of research that shows that diagnostic switching is a really big part of it, but then we have this press release that argues, on the contrary, it actually isn't that at all, and more severe cases of autism are what's increasing the most. This doesn't track with any research I have ever seen, and it also doesn't track with common sense. Like, if diagnostic criteria expanded to include more kids who have less intellectual disability, then it would be really surprising if that wasn't a part of the story. If, on the contrary, the fastest growing group of kids with autism are the ones who are most intellectually disabled. But I also know that it's really unlikely that they would put something in this press release that would be totally fake. So that's a mystery, and I had to figure it out. So what do? I download all the reports, and then I find out that actually all those reports don't have the original methods of how they got the data for those reports, so I downloaded all the original studies and read those original studies that actually fed the data into the reports. So now, after many hours of work, I can explain this one very manipulative sentence of an HHS press release. And that's what we're going to do now. Okay. The first thing I notice is that we have more data than were discussed in this paragraph. So it says that the percentage of ASD cases with higher IQs has decreased steadily over the last six ADDM reports. But we have seven ADDM reports. The first one was just ignored. I don't know why. Now, the 2008 report and the 2010 report, it had some methodological differences, but so did all of them. They all, like, every year, they're like, here are the limitations. Here's what we should do different next time. And so they're all a little different from each other. Why actually was 2008 left off? I mean, I think probably just because they didn't want a graph that was this shape. But if you look at the data for the last six, and I've cut out borderline cases here, so this is just cases of kids with intellectual disability, which is defined at an IQ of below 70. And we see it has been creeping up really for the last four reports, not for the last six. Now, the other thing you might have noticed is that this is a graph from 28 to 40. If you put that on a scale from 0 to 100, it's a much less visible graph, but this is still something interesting and still something that I think should be explained. If we think that broadening diagnostic criteria are the reason why more kids are being diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, then why are there more kids who have serious intellectual disability? And that is because it's weird, and I hope that you are not bored, but I have created a bar graph. So in green, these are kids who have IQ over 85. I should also mention here that some of these kids don't get IQ tests, they just get assessed. So it's different from site to site. The tests are different, and the way that they are assessed by the people doing the assessments are different. So like, ideally, if you have an IQ test for this kid, you use that. If you don't, then you use the assessment. They're just assessed as being in the borderline group, in the intellectual disability group, or not in either of those groups. The green is not either of those groups. The blue is the borderline group. And then down here, you have intellectual disability, so IQ under 70. And you see basically the shape of the graph that we were just talking about, where it was high in 2008, it went down in 2010, and it's been slowly creeping up ever since. But this is not the actual graph. So I prepared what I think is a better version of this graph, because this whole time, what it seems like we've been looking at is the percentage of kids who have been diagnosed with autism spectrum, who are in these different classifications of above 85, between 85 and 70, or below 70 IQ. You would be forgiven for thinking that that was what we were looking at. After all, it's the thing that the original HHS press release said we were looking at. What we have actually been looking at is a percentage of kids diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder broken out into these three groups, but only for the kids for whom we have data. And the cutoff for whether data gets included has changed two times over the course of this data. So to explain that, here's the actual graph. And that's showing that there is a subset of these kids for whom we do not have data. And the size of that subset has been increasing for an interesting reason. In the beginning, we only allowed data in from sites that had a very high percentage of their kids assessed. So either taking IQ tests or being assessed by people doing assessments. And in the beginning, that was close to 90% of kids we had that data for. Any site that didn't have a high percentage of assessment for those kids, that data just got thrown out, was not included in the set. So if you only had 50% of your kids or 30% of your kids with IQ data, that was just not included. Only sites that had a high percentage of data were included. Then in 2012, they started allowing in sites that had less data. Still, there was a bar. You had to have a certain amount. So if you had 30% of your kids, we're not going to include your data. But if you have a certain, certain amount, but a lower bar, we're going to include that data. And that stayed the same for three of these cycles. And during those three cycles, you could see that the numbers stayed pretty much unchanged. And then in 2018, we said, okay, we're just going to include everybody no matter how much data you have on these kids. So if you've only got IQ data on 30% of your kids, we're going to include that data. So now we have a really big piece all up here is stuff that we just don't have data for. So what you can definitely say about this data set is that it isn't very good for comparing year to year. Because we now include a bunch of sites that aren't doing a lot of assessment. And which kids are getting assessment probably isn't random. So if you're including sites that are only doing assessment on 30% of the kids, they're probably doing assessments on the 30% of the kids who have the most need for services. You're not randomly picking kids to do assessments on, you are giving more resources to the kids who need more resources. And so if you look at the sites that are only doing tests on 30% of the kids, those are more likely to be the 30% of kids who have the most need for support. By including those groups, but not having the other 70% of kids who, you know, probably are going to be the ones who needed less support and so are going to test differently than that 30% that you are testing, you're messing up the data. You're making it so that it's not comparable from year to year, which is absolutely 100% known by everyone who works on this report. They know that they have changed these criteria from year to year, and that makes it so that it's not useful for comparing year to year. But they decided to make those changes in the ways they were doing the report for other reasons, which I'm not gonna pretend to understand. Like, I kind of wish they hadn't, but there were all these kids that they weren't including, and the cutoffs were arbitrary, and so maybe let's just include all of the data. And let's work instead to increase our ability to actually collect data, which would be good if we were to do it. If we want to know whether increasing diagnostic criteria has made it so that we have way more kids who are like level one and level two, which are the less severe forms of autism, like a less severe diagnostic classification, if you want to know that, you can just look at that, and we've done those analyses, and we see, as we saw in the beginning of the video, that diagnosis for level one and level two has increased much faster than diagnosis for level three, which is a more profound autism. That's more likely to be nonverbal, more likely to require lifelong care. But then you end up in a situation where there is this one data set where you can actually say that the number of kids with intellectual disability has been going up, not down. And so it must not be diagnostic criteria. It must be something happening to these kids. It's just a lawyer lawyering. It's a lawyer finding the data set that works best for him. But you can say these words and have them be true. This is like lawyer shit. It's like saying true things that make people believe fake things because you're trying to win a battle in court. And that is just how RFK Jr. thinks about this and all the people around him. They are building a case against companies, and winning that case is the thing that matters because that is what gets you credibility. It's what gets you notoriety, and it's what sort of defines success in your world if you are a lawyer. Winning the case defines success. Telling the truth does not define success. I'm sorry, lawyers. You know that. There are other things that make it so that this IQ data is very difficult to compare across years anyway. So, we know that it's messy. We know that IQ data in particular, like, are very hard to compare site to site, like, let alone year to year. We know that we are increasing surveillance. Like, one of the big recommendations has been, let's make sure that we're testing more kids, that we're making, like, especially people in minority groups. So we're testing Hispanic kids and Black kids who wouldn't have been tested at all for autism, who may have not been diagnosed with anything or might have been diagnosed with just intellectual disability rather than ASD plus intellectual disability. Part of the thing here is that we were diagnosing a lot of white kids with autism because their school districts had more resources, because their parents had more influence. There's even data in these reports that indicate that it's an increase in diagnosis rather than an increase in profound intellectual disability. You can see that the percentage of kids that have intellectual disability is like fairly consistent across states. But as the prevalence goes up, the percentage of kids that have an IQ above 70 is what's increasing. Almost as if the thing that increases the rate of autism is including more people in the autism spectrum disorder label. There's so much data that indicates this, and it is all ignored in favor of this one thing, this one terrible metric that we know you can't compare across years. The two sites with the highest ASD prevalence identified higher proportions of children with IQ above 70 compared with any site participating in 2008 or previous ADDM network surveillance years. We know, like, through common sense, through hanging out with people who are on the autism spectrum, but also because of the expanded criteria of the DSM-5, and also because of the expanded availability of services for kids with autism, we know that the number of people who are being included in the autism spectrum diagnosis has gone up. We know this from the data. We know this through common sense. So it is strange that there is this paragraph, the increased autism spectrum disorder prevalence cannot be solely attributed to the expansion. On the contrary, the frustrating thing is the amount of time it took me to get to the bottom of the weird thing that happened to the data in the ADDM that accounts for this. But that data set, the one data set that can be portrayed as showing that it has nothing to do with the expansion of diagnostic criteria, that on the contrary, the kids with borderline intellectual disability, that cohort is actually going up, even though it's not going up, because if you look at the absolute numbers, it's not there. It's only there in the percentages because the denominator is changing. If you look at that one, then it's clear that there must be something else going on. They must be taking something. This is just lawyer bullshit. This is lawyer bullshit by people who are supposed to be doing public health. Are you fucking kidding me? You know how long it took me to get to the bottom of this? How many reports there are that I have to figure out? This is lawyer bullshit. This is why these assholes get paid like $1 million an hour, so they can dredge up shit like this, and then the other lawyer is gonna have to get paid $1 million an hour to figure out why it actually is just like an artifact of the data. Oh my god. So that's the whole thing. Anyway, I said that I would end with some of the actual risk factors for autism that we know of. Number one, probably, though it's not entirely clear, probably increased parental age. It increases a number of risk factors for autism, including preterm birth. And that's another one. The increase in the number of kids who survive preterm birth has gone up substantially over the last 20 years. And those kids have a significantly higher chance of being diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. Something like 15% of kids who are born before week 25. And those kids used to just die. Like, they used to not survive. But now more of them are surviving, so that contributes a small amount to the increase in diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. There's also some indication that an increase in maternal and gestational diabetes is also potentially part of this, or people who get pregnant who already have diabetes. That can also increase the risk of a number of outcomes that can increase your risk of autism. So all that stuff, like, those are things that have increased. There are risk factors that have increased. And that makes sense, because it doesn't seem like diagnostic switching and broadened diagnostic criteria are the only reasons this is happening. But what you can say for sure from this one paragraph here is that they want to manipulate the data to make us think that the problem is different from what it is. They don't want to talk about broadened diagnostic criteria. They don't want to talk about diagnostic switching. They want to talk about the fight that they want to have, the battle that they want to win in court. Because this is lawyers doing lawyer shit, not public health people doing public health shit. Anyway, let's play connections. We deserve it. We deserve it. You watched the video. That was amazing. I made the video. We deserve this. Blonde sun, word pale. Polar is also light colored. Cream. Faint. Beat. Whisk. Bead whisk whip. Was there another one? Cream? You can, like, cream something, right? Like, you got creamed. You got whipped. You got beat. You got whisked. Actually does not fit into that. I don't know. I like that. Creaming is a thing you do, isn't it? Brown rice. Polar bear. Sun bear. I think there's a thing called a sun bear. Black bear. Brown bear. Those are a bunch of kinds of bears. I'm not 100% on board with this category yet, but I like black bear, brown bear, polar bear, and sun bear. You know one thing about me? I know bear types. Pale, word, pool, light. Faint, and dim, and pale. And light, like a small amount. And that leaves us with what? Word, pool, blonde, and rice. My friend is texting me because he's worried about me because I have been having a hard time. That's a nice text. Word, pool, blonde, rice. Word, pool, blonde, rice. Rice, there's a bunch of them. Rice is good if you want to have a million of something. That is them, though, right? So we've got cream, whisk, whip, beat. Does any of those fit in there? Not really. I mean, this has got to be it. I don't know what it is. It is dirty blonde, dirty pool, dirty pool, dirty pool, dirty rice, dirty pool. It's a dishonest, unfair, or unsportsmanlike conduct, particularly in a competitive situation. Describe a physical swimming pool that is unclean and... Well, or yeah, or that's separate. Yeah, no, I know that like a pool can be dirty, AI. I'm aware of the concept of dirty, that it can be applied to a number of nouns. Playing a dirty game of pool and then dirty rice. What the heck is that? I wouldn't want it. That sounds actually, I do want it. I've turned right around. I went from definitely not wanting that to absolutely wanting that. What's dirty? No, that's Cajun? It's a Cajun. It's a Cajun thing. Okay, so it's... Heck yeah. Serve me up some dirty rice, everybody. Okay. It's probably going to be the bears. Yeah, it's going to be the bears. This is a little unclear to me, but I think cream, whisk, whip, and beet will be the green. Well, we did fine after a general set of frustrations. The other thing I'll say, I just listened to a new song from Chica, who I have not heard Chica's music in like 5 years, but new song out, first in over a year on our YouTube. And would you believe that it is about black kids in America not getting diagnosed and instead just sort of being like called oppositional defiant when maybe they might have something else going on. And that's wild. That's a wild coincidence that would happen. And it kicks ass. So I'll link in the description. Because it has, like, as of I'm recording this, it has, like, 700 views, which is criminal. Okay. Deep breath, everybody.